This podcast is brought to you by Podcast Nation.
Welcome back to the WOMED, lovely humans. This week, you get the inside scoop on your new co-host and to get to know her even more. I couldn't be more excited to bring Jackie into the WOMED. This week, we get into the interesting pathways that bring people to nursing, to write for change and healing, all that, and so much more. It feels great having a co-host again. And don't worry, Danny will be joining us this season too. All right, well, that's all I got. Let's dig in. I would love to just like hand make a whole bunch more WOMED merch. I think that'd be really cool.
WOMED merch is on the way. It's going to happen. Are we adding this to our manifesting list?
We're adding this to the manifesting list. Oh my God. I can personally stitch some WOMED merch.
So I found out, Danielle and I are still getting to know each other. And I found out that you can hand stitch.
I can. P.S. Welcome back to the WOMED. This is our getting to know Jackie episode. But yes, in getting to know Jackie, she found out that we both stitch. Well, I stitch, but we have a very cool jean jacket theme in common.
We both found out that we have hand patched and made jean jackets that we have been adding to for the last few years. Mine, I think, is, I mean, oh man, we're going on 8 or 9 years of me patching up this jacket.
Yeah, because we want to give it to our future daughters.
Yes. And this probably sounds very weird to people if you don't patch your own jean jacket.
But it's also even weirder when you think you're the only person that has wanted to create like a family heirloom of sorts so that your kid, your future kid, knows that you were like really fucking cool at one point.
Danielle, literally, we're in her apartment. She grabs her jean jacket and goes, so I have this jacket and one day, you know, I really want to use it as an heirloom to my daughter, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, I got full body chills. I pulled up my phone and I showed her my jean jacket. And I told her.
We had the same patch on there.
Yes. The same exact patch.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember which one it is. Is
it Take It Easy.
Take It Easy, baby.
Mm-hmm. It's so wild. But little do you know, that was me trying to like insert myself into your company and be like, oh my God, you should do some stitching. I will stitch on them. Because I think it's really fun and therapeutic.
Hand-stitched WOMED merch done by Danielle herself.
Yeah. Actually, I think that would be really cute.
That would be very cool. But yeah, so Danielle and I are basically, we're finding out to be soul sisters.
Yeah.
We do disagree on a few things we're finding out.
Yes.
A few things, mostly. Yes.
Which is good, because if we disagreed on everything, everyone would be like, oh my God, they're so fucking annoying.
Get over yourselves. But no, yeah. We do disagree on a few things.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest one so far is
The Office.
Deep breaths. Grey's Anatomy already threw me off quite a bit. And Danielle does not like The Office.
I really don't. I really hate it.
So what exactly about The Office?
I've tried to start it several times. I even tried to start like the British version of it. And that one I found more appealing. And I love Steve Carell. And I totally spaced on his name. It happens. I love him and like everything else that he does. I hate the character of Michael. Like vehemently hate. Jim and Pam, I think they're so cute. They're very cute. Hate Michael, and I literally can't get past it, and I wish I could. I was like, this character is terrible.
So I have heard this from other people, so I'm going to hold too much judgment because I have heard that a lot of people find Michael's character to be so cringy that it's impossible to watch.
Yes.
So, I'll give you that. I can see that. I do respect that you can at least acknowledge Jim and Pam, because if you don't,
they're the cutest.
You don't appreciate a good Jim and Pam relationship, then I don't know if we can get along. But
and Mindy Kaling is one of my favorite actresses.
Okay.
But like I never really watched her in The Office because I couldn't get
it's fair.
Through it.
Okay. So you know what, guys? It's fine. We have some differences. I, on the other hand, love The Office. I can probably quote most episodes.
That's fine.
But we have found some common ground with
Parks and Rec.
Parks and Rec, New Girl,
mm-hmm.
and God bless Schitt's Creek.
Oh my God. I love Schitt's Creek.
Schitt's Creek got me through the pandemic.
Yeah.
I think I started it probably somewhere, oh man, it's all been a blur.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhere during the pandemic, I watched Schitt's Creek and I never thought that there was going to be a show that would come close to The Office. Schitt's Creek is up there. Schitt's Creek is up there like all-time favorites at this point.
Who's your favorite character on Schitt's Creek as they have evolved over the franchise, over the series?
Oh, that is such a good question. I mean, I think I'm going to have to go with Moira. I love me a good Moira Rose moment.
Oh, she's so fantastic. I try to do her accent. I just can't do it.
We'll spare you all.
Yeah, it's pretty bad, Jackie.
Oh my God. Wait, that was actually...
That's the best I've ever done it.
I'm like full blown shook. I'm shook. I had no idea. That was really fucking impressive.
You're welcome. I'm a woman of many talents. Okay, we need to stop. We need to make this.
If we don't stop now, it's going to be
an entire Schitt's Creek episode. That's not what we're here for. My very first question for you, Jackie, is how often do you get a Kelso and Jackie reference? Like, damn, Jackie.
Not quite as much as I get Nurse Jackie references.
I'm very surprised.
Yeah.
I would have totally thought like a Kelso Jackie moment.
You know, not as much, surprisingly. But people love to go to the Nurse Jackie.
I've also never seen Nurse Jackie.
Oh my God, you guys. Oh boy. Oh man, I need to breathe through this.
I apparently have a ton of TV to watch. I'm never going to find a man because I'm just going to be holed up on my couch for the rest of my life. But you know what? I will do it for the sake of the podcast.
I need to take one more deep breath. Please hold on. Okay, Nurse Jackie. We need to get you on. We may need to get you on to Nurse Jackie before we even get on to Grey's because there is just so many great dynamics in Nurse Jackie.
We will leave it up to the WOMED community. What's a more important medical show to watch? And I'll put a poll up in our stories or a post, one or the other. And you guys will dictate what I'm going to spend the next foreseeable months watching and reporting on.
Perfect.
Okay.
Grey's or Nurse Jackie? I think they're going to pick Grey's. But
yeah, there's a lot of Grey's lovers.
Yeah. The WOMED community probably thinks that all we do is watch TV. And it's partially true.
But to be fair, after you've had like a long day, you've been taking care of patients, you have been putting everything into the well-being of someone else, you've been listening to alarms, you've been fielding phone calls, the last thing you want to do is... Well, I mean, some people are probably healthier than me and are like, no, I'm going to go for a run after work. And, you know, great. I hate running. I chase blood.
If you can work out after a 12-hour shift, you are a very special person.
My feet are so swollen. Like, mm-mm. Or they were. I don't have to work 12 anymore. Thank you. But honestly, it's a nice escape. And I know we're not the only nurses that do that, that work and come home. And especially if you're on night shift and you're like prepping for, God, there's no better time to binge than watching like a show all night.
Sometimes you just got to shut the wheels off for a minute.
Yeah.
Throw on some Netflix.
Think
have
about
your
something
moment.
Outside of yourself and the needs of someone else.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, we are going to get to know your new co-host today, Jackie Darling.
Let's do it. Let's jump in.
Awesome. So you are a nurse that wears many hats. And that's a very, very common thing, I feel like, in the nursing community, because not only is it very difficult, especially if you're working purely in the hospital as a bedside nurse, to make any sort of, you know, truly livable income, especially if you work in the South, you know, in different states, unless you work in California, they make a ton of money there in Texas, but good on y'all. But if you're anywhere else in the country, I feel like all nurses have side hustles.
It's definitely starting to become a thing.
Yeah.
Nurses are, I think that there's multi-levels to this. Mm-hmm. There's definitely that need or desire, we'll say, for that extra income. You know, nurses, absolutely, we do not get paid what we deserve.
Right.
Period. End of sentence, end of story. That'll be an episode on its own, I'm sure. But mm-hmm. There's definitely that layer of, yes, like, you know, wanting that extra income. There's another creative level. I think a lot of us nurses
are creatives.
Yeah, we are creatives. We are truly in a profession where we are balancing this science and medicine with our creativity. You know, it sounds so cliche, but nursing is an art form, right? Like caring truly. For people is an art form. And we all have, we're all inherently born with some sort of creative ability. And I think as we kind of progress through our careers, we start, a lot of us start craving that creative outlet that maybe we're not really necessarily getting at work. And so, yeah, so the creativity and then, you know, that layer too of nursing is great, but we need an escape too. We need to find something, you know, another avenue that can kind of light us up a little bit and make us feel like there's more than, you know, just whatever is inside the hospital.
Yeah, I totally feel you on that because everyone, like once you're a nurse, people think you're just a nurse. And you can't, like the minute you try and step outside of that like nursing box, people are like, whoa, whoa, whoa. What do you think you're doing? When it's so normal to want to be more, to like, we're not meant to be just one thing. Like humans encompass so many different levels. Like you're not going to be completely fulfilled just in like one tiny career your whole life without having, you know, other needs met. Like everyone has like a different need and it's going to look different for everybody.
And that's why I think nursing is great in the way that we have some flexibility. Mm-hmm. When you're working in the hospital, you're working 3/12s, you kind of have some time on those days off to maybe start working on passion projects, side hustles, whatever that looks like. And, you know, I really want to make a point to say you don't have to do any of this.
Right.
You, if you are working 3-4 days a week, that is enough. Mm-hmm. There is, I think, this extra weird pressure of, you know, oh, you know, do I need to start something? Should I start a blog? Should I start a social media?
Should I go back to school?
If you are working, and that is well more than enough. So I hope this conversation isn't, you know, getting people thinking about, you know, oh, do I need to be doing this? Whatever. For me, I have been in healthcare for a long time. I've been in healthcare for almost, you know, a little bit over a decade now. And I got to a point where my creativity needed an outlet. I needed a space to move into that was still in healthcare in a way, but still feeding this kind of need that I had.
I'm really glad you touched on that because there is that need, I feel like, in today's society to constantly be doing something, constantly be evolving, constantly be like bettering yourself. And it's like, but that just looks different for everybody.
And then you end up on this path where
you're just not satisfied.
Never.
Yeah.
And if anything, I would say I need some to do some boundary work around all of that. I think when you are one of those people that tends to take on different projects, there is like a deeper level here of like, okay, why am I taking all this stuff on? What am I not really feeling in my worth that I feel like I need to keep taking certain things on, right? Like there's definitely a balance that I think we can all find. Mm-hmm. Something that I'm still also navigating myself is finding projects that light me up. Mm-hmm. Like this.
I'm so glad you said that because for a second I was like, oh, fuck.
Absolutely not. This is exactly it. This is one of those, I don't even want to call it a project because it's more than that, but finding those things that light you up and light other people up, right? We're all going through this together. We've all been through this pandemic year and a half.
Ish
together. And if we can all, you know, kind of tap in, if we have the time and space to help each other out, then I think that, you know, we can do that here with the WOMED and then with my business with Bride Healers. That was a huge, you know, motivating factor behind that.
So what sparked you to create Riot Healers? Were you like, you know what, I'm going to start a t-shirt company?
So this is kind of a long story, and I realize that the listeners probably don't know too much about me. So I'll give the quick like rundown of my medical background, nursing history.
Well, I'm still getting to know you too. So it's like, I know, I totally made this based off of like, you know, Instagram, which can very much be like a highlight reel for people. I mean, I'm guilty of it. Everyone's guilty of it. But I want to get to know you more too, because that's just going to make this podcast that much better.
All right, let's do it. So yeah. I am one of those people that always wanted to go into healthcare. And I know some, I did find nursing later in life, but I am one of those people that always wanted to get into healthcare. I have a little sister that was born with some cardiac complications. She was in the NICU. And I was a bit older. I was like 7 or 8 when she was born. And so I had
You had an awareness.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I knew that I had a baby sister that was supposed to come home, and then she didn't come home, and that she was in the hospital with doctors and nurses that were taking care of her. And ever since that happened, I have always said that I wanted to be a doctor. I wanted to be a nurse. I wanted to go into healthcare. And ever since then, that is all I have set my eyes on. So,
but you started it later.
Started it a little bit later. So I went and did my undergrad at the University of Connecticut, UConn, where I played Division I ice hockey.
That's so cool. I only just started liking hockey when I moved to Nashville. And I was like, what is this? A violent, crazy sport.
Yes. The Preds are a big deal here, too.
They're a huge deal.
Yes.
Huge deal. I wish we had a different name, but, you know, whatever. It's fine.
Yes. So I grew up playing hockey. I'm from Chicago. So I was born and raised on the near west side of Chicago, which kind of like also plays into this story. It kind of like ends up coming full circle. And we can talk a little bit about that later. But I'm from the near west side of Chicago and grew up playing hockey. Grew up, that was really the focus. Like I, you know, of course, was very kind of type A when I was younger, always getting good grades, but really competitive with sports. Ended up playing Division I at UConn. When you play a Division I sport, at least most of them, there are a few exceptions here and there, but at UConn, we couldn't even major in nursing. It was like off the table. You cannot
really
major in nursing if you play a Division I sport. It's just too much of a commitment for both ends. You can't be a nursing student and play a sport. It's just way too much. At the time, I also wasn't really sold on nursing, to be honest. I kind of had my eyes a little bit more on med school. I was kind of thinking, oh, like, you know, this will be my path. So I majored in anatomy and physiology, so very heavy in science. And then after college, I started working at what used to be called the Rehab Institute of Chicago. It's now called the Shirley Ryan Ability Lab. It is the top rehab hospital in the country. Yeah, very cool. I don't know how I got this job. I got super lucky. And looking back, it was probably the most pivotal point in my healthcare career. It really kind of changed the game for me. So anyway, I was working in clinical research with stroke and spinal cord injured patients. And in the hospital, I was first exposed to nurses and to nurse practitioners, and really just fell in love with their scope and the way that they practiced. I think like a lot of nurses or people that are thinking about going into healthcare, I didn't really know what nurses did. I didn't really know the level that they could practice. I didn't know that nurses take a more holistic way to treating patients, right? Like mind, body, spirit. When I say holistic, I don't mean natural
essential oils.
I mean holistic
no
as
harm
in
on those.
Yeah, we love our essential oils too.
I just won't use those as a full treatment and diagnosis method.
Exactly. So holistic in the term of we are treating our patients in the wholeness and entirety of their existence, which is being a human. So I kind of fell in love with this nursing model, we'll say. And that's where I was inspired. I took 2 years off to do this research. And then I applied to a master's nursing program. One of those, it was like 2.5 years, a master's program direct into being a nurse. So it was kind of nice because I didn't have to go back and get another bachelor's degree.
Very cool.
Yeah. So I know that those programs are starting to become more common now, which is wonderful. It was a really great option for me. I didn't want to have to go back and get another bachelor's degree. So
does that mean then, and I'm asking this completely like unawares, since you did that program, does that mean you have a BSN since you had a pre-existing bachelor's?
So if you want to break it down, I believe it means I have a bachelor's of science in my previous degree at UConn.
Okay.
And then I have a master's of science in nursing.
Okay.
So not technically a BSN, but yeah, it's confusing. And like nursing freaking education is like the most difficult thing to understand.
Truly.
Why do we make it so complicated for ourselves? I don't know, but it is what it is. So I did that program, fell in love with nursing. That's also where my interest in activism and social justice really started to kind of rear its head, was in my master's program in Chicago. After that, I started working at the bedside. I was working mostly with adults. I worked on a neuro unit, and then I worked on a cardiac telemetry unit for a few years. And then I decided it was time to go back to school. As we do.
Yeah.
To be honest, I always kind of had my eyes on the family nurse practitioner degree.
Okay.
I always wanted to get into primary care. I always loved clinics. I knew that in primary care, there was a huge need for providers. There's a huge need in this country to do the preventative and wellness care that most Americans aren't getting. And that was kind of what I always had my eyes on. So I think it ended up being like 3 years at the bedside, went back to school. When I went back to school is also when I started teaching. So I, again, somehow
doing
fell back.
A lot of things here, Jackie.
I know. I don't know if we can keep all these things straight. But so anyway, so I started teaching. It was a wonderful, wonderful job. I'm still teaching to this day. I teach bachelor nursing students in their clinical rotations. And it's really amazing because it provides a tuition waiver for school.
Oh, neat. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. Super. I mean, so it's like one of those jobs, like it's amazing. It helps with school. It also is this perfect balance of, I still love the hospital. Mm-hmm. I miss the bedside. I love the hospital. So it's really fun to be able to bring my students into the hospital and try to give them, we'll say maybe a better experience than I had when I was in nursing school.
Ooh. Do tell.
I don't know. I think we've all had those instructors when you're in nursing school that are really strict, or, you know, do things so by the book, or they're just really, you know,
eating their young.
And I never wanted to do that with my students. So I really do try to create a environment where they feel safe to ask dumb questions, where they feel safe to say, hey, you know, I'm really uncomfortable about doing this skill. Can you help me? Can you guide me? So it's been an absolute blast. I love teaching. And so I have one more year left of school and probably one more year left of teaching, and then bring on the FNP life.
Oh my goodness. So is that something that you have? Is there like a fast track from school into like the clinic or hospital setting that you're trying to be in?
It's kind of like the same transition that happens when you graduate from nursing school.
Okay.
Where you can do as much as you can when you're in school to try to make those connections, right? To try to get to know your preceptors really well and stay in contact with people and network as much as you can in school. But there's no direct, like, it's just like nursing school, where when you graduate, you kind of are on your own, time to apply for jobs, time to network as much as you can. So I definitely have an interest. I know where I want to be. I know I want to work in primary care at least for a few years to really get a deeper understanding of what the hell I'm going to do. Primary care is a lot. You know, I'm kind of deep in my clinicals right now, and it's a lot. And so I definitely plan on taking a few years to get comfortable, see what I really like, and then you kind of just go from there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Other than that, I also have been working with my university and the Chicago Department of Public Health. It's a mouthful. We used to say the CDPH. And I have been working on a team since the beginning of the pandemic, so back in April, on a project working in the community. And we have been going into really vulnerable populations, congregate settings, to do mass testing for COVID, and now to do mass vaccinating. So we've been going into jails, homeless shelters, encampments, disability centers, mental health centers, to provide outreach, education, and kind of provide this kind of like surveillance data for the city to mm-hmm. really catch outbreaks before they get bad. So that has kind of been my experience since the beginning of the pandemic. And it has been wonderful. It has been really eye-opening.
Oh, I can't imagine. Mm-hmm. Public health is such an intense and an intensely unique field of nursing. Next to like peds and stuff, public health was actually my favorite rotation. There was so much that I didn't know about it and didn't realize what a valuable resource public health nursing was. Like, so many people, that's their only access with the medical community.
Completely. And when I spoke before about being from the near west side of Chicago, this is kind of where this comes in. So I grew up in the near west side in a neighborhood known as Little Italy. My family is super Italian, came over from Italy 100 years ago, settled into the little Italian neighborhood in Chicago. So just like any other major city, like New York, Boston, we all have our Italian neighborhoods. And this neighborhood is also known as the Illinois Medical District. So there's four hospitals all within just a few blocks of each other. There's Rush, UIC, University of Illinois, Stroger, aka Cook County Hospital, and Mount Sinai, all within the same few blocks. And this is where I grew up. I grew up just a few blocks down from all of these major hospitals. And these hospitals have been quoted before as two different worlds apart down the block, right? So we have a public hospital that takes care of the community, takes care of everyone. Doesn't matter if you have insurance, doesn't matter if you can pay, doesn't matter if you have documentation status, you can walk in the door, get your care, and you can walk out. And then right next door, we have our private hospital where not only do you need insurance, you probably need a special type of insurance. You will still probably pay an arm and a leg. And but they are offering the highest quality care you can probably get in America. Top of the line research, cutting edge technology, the latest surgeries, right? And so I grew up, again, with this kind of just curiosity, right? Why is it that we have one hospital here that is flawless, that is skyscraping up to the sky with glass windows and flat screen TVs and a Starbucks in the lobby, and then you walk a block down the road, we've got another hospital that looks like it's 60 years old. You walk in and patients can barely get any resources. And so this is kind of, you know, I was young, but you do start to question things and you start to remember, especially when you get older, like, oh, interesting. So when I got into my master's program in nursing school, it was in the same neighborhood. It was at the University of Illinois, Chicago, just blocks from where I grew up. And I, with a few other classmates, started an organization called Student Nurses for Social Justice. And that's where we started advocating and doing a lot of protests and rallies and speaking on issues like gun violence in Chicago and how that relates to people's health and food security and all of these different things that have kind of followed me in my career and really were a, we'll say, a platform and a starting point for riot healers.
I have chills. I love hearing your story, and it's so neat hearing about different things and stuff that shape like what fields and stuff you're drawn to in nursing. It's very, very Very cool. I'm just like totally at a loss for words. I was like, and are you just keep talking because I'm just taking it all in.
You know, I will say, I think we all have these little tidbits that mm-hmm. follow you in life, and maybe you ignore them for a little bit, but certain themes keep coming back. Mm-hmm. And for me, it was this theme of public health and this theme of health equity. And, you know, I am white. I grew up on the Near West Side of Chicago in an Italian neighborhood. And I grew up in a city, like most urban cities are still somewhat not formally segregated, but are mm-hmm. so based in systemic racism. There are communities that have been historically marginalized and are still recovering from decades worth of disinvestment. And Chicago is absolutely notorious for this. There mm-hmm. are highways that literally divide neighborhoods that are still divided on race. And so this has been something that I have tried to not just understand, but find my place as a white person working in different neighborhoods to try to come in with as much, not just empathy and understanding, but knowing that these neighborhoods and these people have been historically marginalized. And what is my place as a white person to do this kind of work? That is definitely a bigger question and one that I'm still kind of working through and have mm-hmm. great colleagues that I can talk to and that can help me navigate this. But a bigger conversation is definitely about uplifting Black people, Black healthcare workers, mm-hmm. Black women in healthcare, right? And I've been really fortunate to have wonderful, wonderful colleagues that have helped open up these conversations for me. But this theme of public health and this theme of health disparities has always followed. Like I said, when I was doing my research at the Rehab Institute, that's really kind of where I started to see these health disparities in real life. So I grew up kind of having this curiosity, this questioning. And then when I was doing my research at the Rehab Institute, I was seeing all sorts of patients. So I think a thing people don't really understand about a lot of research is that a lot of research is open to everyone, which when you're doing research at one of the top rehab hospitals and you can recruit basically anyone, it doesn't matter if you have insurance, it doesn't matter if you can pay, the research covers it. We would attract lots of people that did not have insurance, lots of people that they would come into our research lab, and we may be the only healthcare professionals that they're going to see.
Yeah.
They don't have primary care. They're not seeing a physical therapist. They're not, you know, they can't even get their medications refilled, let alone get physical therapy after they've had a stroke or spinal cord injury. So for a lot of patients, we were the only people that they would see. And then on the flip side, the same day, again, this is one of the top research rehab hospitals in the country. We're attracting professors from Northwestern, tenured mm-hmm. professors from Northwestern. We're attracting politicians. We're attracting people from, you know, almost elitist classes that I cannot even understand. So in the same day, I'm having a patient that had to have a voucher to get on three different buses to try to get to our lab versus someone else that drives up in their Porsche convertible, mm-hmm. right, to get out. And it's not to say that one is better than the other, right? You know, I think one of the beauties of working in that lab was really seeing how we are really all the same, especially mm-hmm. after such a devastating diagnosis like a stroke or a spinal cord injury, how people, yes, they struggle with the same things. Yes, they are all relying on family for support or friends for support, but how different those things can look.
Yeah. And how easy it is to get it.
Exactly. So this was the first time I really started to see this firsthand and think, well, shit.
Yeah.
I need to do something about this. This mm-hmm. is what I'm meant to do. I need to, this is what I'm meant to get into. So that kind of is what led me to really want to get into primary care. and to try to see patients before the strokes happen.
Right.
Before the heart attacks happen.
Preventative medicine.
So
that apparently we don't like to pay for as a country.
I wish I knew the saying. It's like an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't know, but I hope I didn't mess that quote up, but I think you know what I mean, right?
Yeah.
You all know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So this theme of health disparities and this theme of primary care, health promotion, prevention, again, followed me through nursing school. And then it followed me through when I was working at the bedside. And now here we are, almost done with school.
Almost done with school. Getting ready to get back into it. Would you take a job as a public health nurse practitioner? Or would you, I mean, can you do both? Could you work there and then like in a clinic or?
And that's a really great thing about this FNP degree that I knew really attracted me to that one specifically is because it is so diverse in what you can do with that. And I think in the beginning, I'll probably stay in the clinic just to really get comfortable providing primary care.
And honing your skills.
Absolutely. You know, I think there's this other very wrong misconception about glamorizing nurse practitioners and, you know, the pay and this and that. And it's a lot to, it's going to be a huge adjustment for sure, working as a nurse practitioner in a year. And so I think I'm going to take some time to just focus on primary care and focus on how to deliver that and get comfortable in that new role. But it's really great because in clinics, and this is why like I'm such a dork, I love clinics. I love the hospital. I do love the hospital too, but I love the clinic because there are these opportunities to kind of start your own programming in clinics, right? That is kind of that public health branch. So I think that's where I see myself kind of doing the more seeing patients in the clinic and then trying to maybe help with some programming within the clinics as well.
I wanted to circle back to something that you said about Chicago and how, you know, it's been notorious for segregation and really keeping like marginalized communities where, you know, in like these like red line districts, right? And I was listening to, I think it was a episode on The Daily about how, and you probably know more than I do, I want to say, I think it was like a community in like the north side was, had actually approved reparations be paid.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. To these communities. And I was like, oh my God, that's amazing.
Evanston, Illinois.
Yes.
Is the first. Evanston is a little, I wouldn't call it, I mean, I guess you would call it a suburb, but it is on the north side. And it is where Northwestern University is mm-hmm. housed. So Evanston is very progressive. It has mm-hmm. historically always been very liberal and very progressive. And they are the first community in the US to do that, to provide reparations for Black families. And yes, I think you're right, because I think I listened to the same episode of The Daily. Maybe we can link that in the show notes for whoever wants to listen.
Because it was a great episode. It really broke down how they wanted, you know, reparations to look now in a way that was effective and like would promote growth for these families. I need to go back and listen to it again, but it really touched on all the different like arguments, you know, people would have for or against it, you know, and just really very unbiased talked through and broke everything down. I thought it was a really beautiful done episode.
Absolutely. And I think it was one of those pieces of legislation that didn't really, kind of was like flying under the radar for a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then when it was passed, has gotten a lot of traction. And I am really hoping that it sets a precedent for, I think that's what a lot of people are hoping. And they really did kind of trailblaze this first piece of legislation that they are really hoping other communities will follow in place.
Yeah.
But Chicago, you know, Chicago is not any different than most major cities in the US with this. Yeah. There have been decades to centuries worth of disinvestment and purposeful disinvestment, mm-hmm. we should say, and that have resulted in systemic racism that we see in the hospitals and in our healthcare system every single day. Mm-hmm. So I am excited to kind of talk more on these subjects on this season of the WOMED.
Me too.
We're going to, you know, because I think they're important and we all want to do a little bit better and how we can not just provide care to people one-on-one, but how can we start thinking about our healthcare system and our roles in this?
Yeah. Yeah.
Are we feeding into these systems of inequality mm-hmm. and racism
and internalized biases? And,
definitely.
Yeah.
And I'm definitely one to say I am absolutely still learning.
Same.
I have all the answers, and I am not going to pretend like I have all the answers here. So we're happy to bring
on we're going to get it right. But like we want to, God, that sounds like such a generic fucking thing to say. But like, honestly, these are difficult conversations to have, but the fact that we're trying to have them and we're trying to help other people have them and learn together that way, I think it's going to make for something really beautiful.
Absolutely. And I hope that we can bring on some really incredible guests that can further help us understand these issues and further help all of us understand these issues and understand where our place is and understand how we can be better allies, be better advocates, and use our voices a little bit more for change.
On that note, I want to talk a little bit more on Riot Healers. So you created Riot Healers, this incredible activism-centered brand, but I love your like give back with it too. Like for like every purchase, and you're very transparent on it, for like every purchase people have made on it, you have it broken down into how much money and you can go on the website, you can go on our Instagram, you can see it, but like all the money that you've donated from those purchases to different like Chicago-based organizations.
So giving back was a huge value that I wanted to really keep part of Riot Healers since the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And this kind of, I guess, transparency and integrity, we'll say, has been kind of at the forefront of when I decided that I wanted to start a business. I knew I could either just start the business and then figure everything out as time went on, or I could figure everything out, make sure I did everything the right way, and do it all the way that I wanted to do it from day one. So I wouldn't have to kind of go back and backtrack and figure out. So giving back, especially to Chicago-based local organizations, was always really important to me. And even when we just started, even if I can only donate, 10% of my profits, if that's what I can do, then that's what I can do. And that was a huge piece of how I wanted to model the business. And Riot Healers was, oh man, I can't believe we're here talking about it.
How did you even come up with the name? Because I love the name. So how did you come up with like the name Riot Healers? Because Riot is kind of, it's a touchy word in today's society.
It's a little charged.
It's a little charged. That's a good way of putting it.
So I came up with the idea for the company first. The name came later. And the idea for the business was, I guess you could say, birthed out of a lot of angst.
Angst.
A lot of angst. So I was working, as I said, working as a community health nurse, also teaching through the pandemic. Like everyone else, I dealt with a lot of anxiety. A lot of anxiety around the pandemic, a lot of anxiety about everything else going on in the world. And drawing and painting has always been an outlet for me. It's always mm-hmm. been something that I loved to do. So when the pandemic started, I was one of those people that started painting at home, right? I was like painting on walls, painting
happy trees,
planters. No, literally, I was like painting cutesy floral designs and things that just made me feel happy, to mm-hmm. be honest. Sunsets on the beach, you name it. Things that, I really just needed some space to disconnect. And you can only watch so much Netflix. So I started drawing and painting. Now, as the months kind of went on throughout the summer, June of 2020, we'll say May and June of 2020, of course, when George Floyd was murdered and we had this political uprising, and then it leads through the summer up until the election. This is when I really kind of started to hone in on more of these designs that were not targeted, but my designs started changing from these florally, sunset, peaceful mm-hmm. designs to designs that resonated with me and what was going on. So white coats for Black Lives, Black Lives Matter, nurses for Black Lives Matter. I was becoming extremely inspired by all of the protests and the rallies and the designs that you see on in marches, mm-hmm. designs that you see painted on pieces of cardboard boxes mm-hmm. in the streets. And that's where the design started to kind of take a turn. And as the election got closer, I was starting to create more designs for these rallies, for when friends and whoever wanted to go march, wanted to go rally for the election, I would paint just on these pieces of cardboard, on these pieces of random paper in my house. We would take them to the marches. And over some time, I started thinking, maybe something is here. Maybe I can do something with this. And at the same time, people were identifying with the designs. People were getting more interest. People wanted to know, how was I coming up with these designs? Like, how can I share this? How can I use this? Can you put this on a t-shirt, right? Mm-hmm. And that's where I came up with the idea for the business. And when it came time to pick a name, I was trying to think of different ways to explain how I was feeling. Explain what this business meant to me, because yes, riot is definitely a charged word that especially this last year got a lot more negative connotation than I think it had before with the quote unquote, with the riots that were going on. Right. And it's to the point where I remember I came up with the name Riot Healers, and I would tell people like, oh, they would ask, what are you going to name this business? And a lot of people said, oh, I wouldn't do that. Ooh, I would not put that in the name. And I just stuck to my guns and I said, nope, I'm keeping the name. And I loved the juxtaposition of the mm-hmm. two words. Riot is charged.
Yeah.
But I want it to be charged mm-hmm. because it should be charged.
Yeah.
If you have participated actively in this past year and you've opened your eyes, or your eyes have been open this whole time and now they're further opened to what has taken place, then you should be charged. Mm-hmm. You should be pissed. So I knew that riot was kind of a word that might not be received well, mm-hmm. but I knew that the community that I was trying to speak to would understand. On the other hand, I wanted to pair it with another word that encapsulated what healthcare professionals embody that tends to get overlooked. And I do think that healers is the perfect word for that. Mm-hmm. Because as healthcare workers, essentially,
that's the basis of everything that we do.
We are.
Like, that's our goal.
We are healers in a lot of different ways. We are healing patients and we are healing entire communities with the work that we are doing every day. And so I wanted to pair the two words together. Like I said, I got a lot of people that kind of rolled their eyes at me and said, oh, I do not think that that's a good idea, but I kind of stuck to it and I'm happy that I did.
I'm happy you did too. I love the movement. And you mentioned like your designs and stuff were like inspired by things you'd see at marches and protests. And I think we should touch on, and something we're going to touch on more in the next coming weeks as we come up to it. But there is a march that is going to be happening in DC, November 7th. And Jackie and I, your Fearless WOMED team, will be in attendance. It is a march for nurses, for healthcare workers. And I'm really excited. I feel like now, especially, considering the last almost 2 years, nurses and healthcare workers are even more in the media. We are being heard. Like, this pandemic didn't just bring to light new issues in nursing, right? Like, we've all been struggling with the deficits of healthcare and what limited resources we have sometimes. And I feel like now is our time that we have the platform. We have people's ears to really start trying to make a change and make a better, safer work environment for healthcare personnel.
Completely. Like, I really like what you said, that we've always had a voice. And we have. We've always had a voice, but I don't know if everyone was listening.
Mm-hmm.
And the pandemic really, I think, just gave us a new sort of licensing to use those voices because the public can't look away anymore.
Right.
We're seeing footage of what things look like inside some hospitals right now. We are seeing the graphic, you know, kind of scary things that are happening with COVID and with patients and, you know, being put in body bags and being kept outside of hospitals and trucks and just, you know, horrifying images.
And people not being able to even get in to be treated.
And then on top of that, we are all battling different sources of misinformation,
mm-hmm.
whether it's online and more so probably in your own personal life. I think we all have someone in our life that maybe refuses to get vaccinated or, you know, doesn't think that COVID is real. And it's this whole other level now of kind of taking these things in a personal way,
mm-hmm.
because here you are, the healthcare worker, doing these things day in and day out. And now you have family or friends that are kind of, you know, going against things that you are seeing every single day in real life.
When ultimately we're, as healthcare providers, as nurses, as doctors, as, you know, PAs, we are just trying to keep you healthy. We don't want any harm to come to you. Like that's why we joined this profession. We want to take care of and heal people. Like that is the basis of everything that we do, that everything that we talk about on this podcast is because we have been called to a profession to treat sick people, to make people better. And that's just being disregarded and diminished. Like our educations and what value and stuff that we bring are being diminished by a lot of information that's out there.
So if you are listening to this and you are hearing what we're saying and you can relate, you know, you're not alone.
We're here for you.
I think that's why a lot of organizations like Impact, the group that is starting this protest rally in DC, COVID depending, of course, hopefully we will be able to safely march. If not, we are planning things virtually regardless. So I hope that you can join us virtually. But I think that that's why we are seeing more of these organizations like Impact, like Riot Healers, because there is so much frustration and hurt and so much desire to make things better for us and for our workforce. And that's why I love Impact as well, because they're interdisciplinary. It's not just nurses, it's not just doctors, it's about us kind of coming together mm-hmm. as
a united force,
because that's how it should be, right?
Mm-hmm.
Going back and forth, nurses fighting with doctors, doctors, you know, barking at nurses, blah, blah, blah. It's such a waste of time.
The hierarchy is unneeded. Like the healthcare team truly doesn't function without each other, without every level, facet, CNA, dietitian, janitorial staff. Like the hospital cannot function if everyone isn't working together.
You know, Danielle, this brings up a question for me because we're talking about all of these things, all of these somewhat, I wish they weren't touchy, but somewhat touchy subjects that I think mm-hmm. people are a little timid to bring up. You have never been one to be shy talking about these things on your platform. How has this past year been for you?
This last year is just almost 2 years now. It's just been a whirlwind, right? I've lost probably close to like 25, if not like 30. No, it's probably closer to almost like 40,000 followers at this point since the start of the pandemic.
Wow.
And asking people to wear masks and stuff like that. So that's been pretty jarring and kind of sad, honestly, because again, that whole feeling of, you know, my education is being completely discredited. Something that you know you work really hard for, you've paid for.
Yeah.
a lot of us are still paying for. Mm-hmm. So I guess as someone who's like not actively at the bedside, I was like, what can I do to help this year? You know, I had to step away from nursing because I was so empty. Like I was so burnt out, and that'll be a completely, you know, different episode. You know, there's guilt, but on not being a bedside nurse during the pandemic. But, you know, we do have that whole martyrs complex, and nurses and doctors and stuff. Like we're not martyrs. You know, we didn't sign up for this. We are not soldiers.
You're also specialized in NICU.
Yeah.
Which maybe wouldn't be the most helpful.
I would not be helpful in an adult ICU. It would take, you still need to be trained in these in different situations. So social media was pretty much my only platform, you know, that I felt like I could use to spread facts, spread things that people could do, but also empathize with, you know, the nursing community. A lot of people are like, well, a lot of people have their own issues with NICU and they think we're just holding babies. Like they don't realize how intense an environment, like babies code, babies need emergency meds, babies need emergency blood push, babies have their chest cracked open for ECMO cannulation.
Yeah. You're literally putting tiny IVs into babies.
Scalps. No, but yeah, like it's a whole other world. It's just as scary as an adult ICU, but on a completely smaller level. But that doesn't mean that the two are transferable.
I hope not without time. And I don't know if a lot of people understand that during the pandemic, there were certain specialties that were needed.
Mm-hmm.
ICU, ER, probably med-surg to kind of help. I know a lot of med-surg nurses had to go over into the COVID units. So yep. Filling mm-hmm. that kind of up. The peds units, a lot of the peds units slowed down.
Not until now.
They slowed down until now. So, yeah. You know, unless you kind of were trained previously in these kind of specialties, there's not a lot you could do. And I don't think that you or anyone else needs to beat themselves up about what they did or what they did not do. You're right. Nurses have a history of being martyrs and feeling like we need to put everything forward to take care of people. And
at the expense of ourselves. I've gotten a lot of hate. I've gotten a lot of thank yous. I've gotten a lot of people actually message me and say that they're finally going to get the vaccine because of everything that I've been posting and saying.
Amazing.
Yeah. So those definitely make up for some of the tougher messages.
Well, I'm sure I can come with the whole WOMED community and give you a big thank you, because a lot of people with the platform that you have would not put themselves out there because of the level of criticism and DMs and horrible things that people can say. So thank you for using your platform for change and for these facts. And even if you can just convince one person to get vaccinated, I mean, you did your job.
Well, I'm very grateful for that. I'm very grateful for you and the work that we're going to start doing here. So on that note, make sure to follow Jackie at JacquelineDarling_RN and check out the WOMED IG as well. Keep sending us your NDEs, or if you just need a shout out from Jackie and I, let us know what you think of the Whoa No You Didn't segment. And I know it's annoying, but if you have a second, if y'all can leave a review, subscribe on whatever platform you're listening, we would be so appreciative. It truly does help get the WOMED in more ears, and it allows us to keep bringing you awesome episodes. See y'all later. WOMED out.